Radio City number 219. John Grayson, Rob Ross here with you once again. And boy, we have a lot to go over. It's been a long time, Rob Ross, and great to be back with you. How's everything going?
Not bad. You know, I was just thinking, is it 219? That's phenomenal. We've already now been doing this for a full 7 years, and you and I are now on the cusp of having worked together for 11 years, because, of course, the end of July, beginning of August is when we first did
Overnight America. Yeah. No. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's been crazy. I mean, I will tell you, you know, that it has been this past week especially, but I mean, just overall, and I don't know if it's the weather getting into summer and it's hot here and everything else, but it just seems like everything is a little heavier. Everything is a little harder to take. Everything has been just a little more wearing on me lately. So it's nice to be back here in our little safe space.
What you just said, though, is absolutely true, because, you know, you're immediately, certainly when, like for myself, when I have to go to the office, you know, on a day when it's already hot at 7 o'clock in the morning, which is when I usually leave, and you come out and you feel refreshed, and all of a sudden you're feeling very weighed down and just icky,
yeah,
for lack of a better phrase. You know, it's hard to get your wheels really spinning, and traveling home in the evening, it's the same problem. You know, I walk up the hill because I try to get as much exercise as possible after work as well, just by getting some, since I live on a hill, like I like to call it, you know, extra free cardio. You know, it's tiring, and you know, you try your best to maintain a sense of balance and calm and rationality and be even keeled about things, but somehow, somewhere, sometime during each day, someone is going to say or do something that is just going to grate at you, and it's very hard to restrain yourself. You have to really, really learn how to hold on to your own leash. And I've found myself doing that lately. But I mean, it's been a while since we've even talked and done a show. I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 218 was done in March. So a lot's been going on since then. And, you know, in that time, on the good news front, it's been by and large, and I'm, you know, just as an overall scope, it's been a very calm sort of period. You know, my day job has been really good, very
excellent.
Busy. I continue to enjoy it and learn every day and be part of this. We've booked our first vacation in 8 years. So we're going to Tampa for a week in August. And, you know, I feel by and large physically good. We'll talk about this because, you know, I think it's important, as we've said before, especially when you get to be around our age, you have to maintain your health. And I did have another unwanted health scare, an unexpected one at the end of March. And it involved actually having to go for a very uncomfortable and invasive procedure. But the short of it is I saw blood in my urine. It wasn't a lot. It was just a little bit. But it alarmed me naturally because I hadn't seen that since the aftermath of the biopsy two years ago.
Yeah.
I immediately called the urologist, made an emergency appointment, went the next day, and they said we were probably going to want to schedule a CAT scan with contrast to see if, God forbid, it might be bladder cancer. And then we're going to want to do a cystoscopy, which is, how do I put it in a very delicate manner? If you think a biopsy on your prostate is uncomfortable, oh boy.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Right. That's the only way to put it. But I bit the bullet. I went, I did the, they had me do a battery of blood tests before the cystoscopy, much in the same way that I go for my regular blood tests for my PSA levels. Did that. I then went for the CAT scan, which was very easy. It was very relaxed. It took all of 10 to 15 minutes, and it was great because the place where I go, the appointment was already set, and I didn't even have to wait. They just said, come on in, get undressed, we'll, you know, hook you up to the IV, and that was it. The cystoscopy, they prescribed for me, I think it was a Valium, to take exactly a half hour beforehand. I arrived almost a full hour and change early at the urologist's. I took a car out there. I sat there for about 15 minutes. I'm watching the clock, and the nurse comes out and says, well, you know, we've just had a cancellation. You want to get it done now? I was like, well, I haven't taken the the tranquilizer yet. And she said, you don't really need it. She goes, it'll make you groggy. You'll be, you know, fading in and out all day if you've never taken one of these things. She goes, I promise you, I will hold your hand. She wasn't being funny or anything. She said, I'll hold your hand. You don't worry. We're going to numb you. Let's just get it done. It takes less than 5 minutes. I said, okay, let's just go. So I didn't take the pill. Big surprise. We did it. Yeah, it was uncomfortable, but you're watching it actually live on the screen in front of you. And what the doctor found is that because I have an enlarged prostate, it is starting now, and this was probably the cause of that very minor trickle of blood. It's starting to the enlarged prostate is now starting to basically push up against my bladder, which could develop into a much more serious problem as time progresses. So he recommended something called aquablation. It's either that or have the prostate removed, and I'm not having surgery.
Right, right.
So I read up on it because he gave me a pamphlet for it. And he taught, I said, do we need to have this done right away? He goes, no, you take your time. I said, because I want to go on vacation. He goes, no, you go on your vacation. You enjoy it. We can do this sometime around late September, October, and we'll map it out when I see you next, which I'm seeing him in 2 weeks from this coming Friday. Aquablation is a non-surgical procedure. It is done with laser and water. And what it does basically is almost like power washing away the scar tissue that is part of an enlarged prostate, which then reduces the size, you know, and removes it from you know, any kind of like running up against your bladder, et cetera, et cetera.
Probably gets rid of the swelling as well, yeah?
Yes, and it has a 98% success rate. So
perfect.
With all that having been said, I will do that. You know, it's mapped out in a way so far that if I go in on a Thursday, he goes, have you ever had a colonoscopy? I said, absolutely. He goes, it's less time than a colonoscopy. You're out. He goes, you'll stay the night in the hospital. We'll let you go the next night. The only drawback is you have to have a catheter. I'm like, oh, Jesus, you know. But when he said it, he said, you know, you have to come back Tuesday and it would be removed. I'm like, wait a minute, you're not going to send me home with a catheter in me, are you? And I was reading, and it says they let you out the next day. They remove the catheter the next day. I get that. So maybe it's just he made a mistake. And regardless, it's a one day stay in the hospital, and I'll get it done and have done with it. And I just want to put all of this behind me, you know, because it's been really taxing.
Yeah.
So that's been really it. I dropped 21 pounds. It's gone up and down, but it's still in the 21 pound range. I feel good by and large. The last time I saw my physician, he got actually excited. And for a guy that looks like he's somewhere between 50 and 200 years old and fell off a charm bracelet, you know, it was kind of surprising, you know, because he said to me, he goes, I want you to see something. Look at your last cholesterol and glucose results. He goes, your newest numbers are even lower than before. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And he even said to me, I didn't recognize you at first because you've lost so much weight.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's really good. So that's a positive. So
good for you.
We shall see. So really, that's been it for my own life. You know, there's just been nothing else going on. Just been focusing on work and, no puns intended, just getting through day to day to day.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, yeah, and to update my own health, I mean, given it's been now 10 months, I think, since I had my surgery, since I had the gastric sleeve done. And in that time, my goal was to lose 100 pounds. I am now 75 pounds on my way to that. So I have 25 pounds more to lose. But I hit the 75-pound mark earlier this week. And could not be happier. I have not had blood work done, and this is one of the interesting things about it. You mentioned the cholesterol thing. I've not had blood work done since before I had the surgery, so I have no idea. But if the way that I feel is any indication, then it's going to be great. So we'll see, I guess. I think I go back in another month.
Well, I can say one thing. Folks, for those of you who are listening, I can see John right now, and he looks great. I hate him
for
it. you know, but and I'm also really proud of him for doing it, which is what inspired me to, you know, try and do this to bring down my own cholesterol and glucose and the PSA, because if you lose weight, your PSA does, in fact, decrease. You know, you have to inflict a lot of discipline on yourself. For me, it's a case of, you know, eating salads more than 3 days a week, basically.
Yes.
There are 2 days a week that I still do the liquid diet, you know, just have a smoothie at lunch and drink a lot of water. But you know, for you, I just think this is fantastic. But you know, just I don't want to sound like an old Jewish grandmother, but you know, please go to the doctor, just have the blood work done.
I will.
Do the basics, just for your own peace of mind and everybody else's.
No doubt. Yeah, it'll get done. It's just a matter of, you know, whenever they want to do it. The other thing, and we've got so much stuff to go over. We mm-hmm. lost two absolute giants of the entertainment industry this week. That debacle of a debate was this week. I'm sure we're going to talk about that a little bit. But I did want to start off with something kind of fun. Because as we speak, I am doing something right now that I have not done in probably 20 years. No, not that. I am.
Oh, my God.
I am sipping scotch.
Don't you know drinking the devil's fire water is going to send you straight to hell, boy?
Yeah, but I'm willing to chance it. And this one's actually really nice. I don't know if you're a scotch drinker at all or have you ever been?
My chosen tipple from the time I was about 14 and learned about alcohol and what mods would drink was scotch and Coke.
Okay. All right. Well, this is
from
just
the time I was 14 till I was 30 something.
I didn't even start drinking at all until I was 30. So you got a little head start on me, but every so often I would get that, you know, kind of, I'm thinking, you know what? I could go for a scotch right about now. And this was one of those times I went and I poured this one the same way I pour my tequila. Into a glass. That's it. So that's what I normally drink is tequila, but went to the liquor store on Friday, just kind of re-up everything. And they happen to be doing samples of this thing. And they are not, by the way, giving me anything for promoting this. So I'm not like getting any kickback for this, but it's from Sovereign Brands. It's called Deacon. It's a blended scotch. So it's not, you know, some fancy schmancy single malt, but it's quite good. And what I like about it and what I like to do, I mean, the reason that I bought a bottle of it after I had this sample at my local liquor store is that it does not have that nasty cold medicine taste to it. It's actually quite smooth. If I had to say, it's a little on the smoky side without being waxy, which, you know, it's one of the reasons why I don't drink mezcal much, is that tequila has a tendency to get a waxy flavor to it anyway that I don't like. So I'm really particular about what I drink. But when you add the smoke of the mezcal, it tends to make that worse. This doesn't have that. And it's, yeah, like I said, you know, I'm not a scotch expert by any means, but I'm pretty impressed with the Deacon.
I think, you know, going back, and it's been quite a long while since I drank scotch, on the usual basis of when I would have scotch and Coke, I would always ask for, like, Johnny Walker.
Okay,
black.
Yeah.
I think that was what they always had, you know, available. Red or black was always available. But the one time I did get a single malt whiskey, which I was very fond of, this is going to sound so weird, for my graduation from college, my fiance, God rest her soul, Susan, bought me a bottle of Lafroy, which was excellent. And she had bought it on the recommendation after reading an interview. I think it may have been the last printed interview done with Captain Beefheart.
Oh, wow.
In Spin Magazine around 1988 or 89. And he had mentioned Lafroy. So, you know, she went out and got it. And, she, you know, it gave us both a lot of laughs. And I remember that was like the one time that I genuinely enjoyed a single malt whiskey. I mean, I very, very, very rarely now drink any kind of hard spirits. I think the last time that I had any was maybe just before the whole thing began with my prostate issues in maybe June or July of 2022. And I was at the book launch party at the company that I worked for, and they had an open bar and they had Grey Goose vodka. And that's the only vodka that I really like actively go out of my way to ask for, because my choice of tipple nowadays would be, you know, cranberry, Grey Goose, lime on the rocks, you know, just very simple, very refreshing.
Nice.
I'm more, if I do indulge, it's wine. I still am more of a wine drinker than anything, you know, and I after spending well over a decade of taking those wine and cheese classes and pairings and so on at City Winery, I like to think that my education has paid off, because when we go out to dinner, if I do go to an office event or something and I have wine, I know what I'm talking about, and I can actually taste and stop and think about it, you know, because I actually do the things that you learn in a wine tasting class.
Yeah. And see, so, I would love to. I can't. I am highly allergic to tannins, which means cigar smoke and wine, especially red wine. I mean, do me in the worst possible way, which is kind of tragic because I do enjoy the way it tastes. I just can't drink it. So good for you that you can. But yeah, this one I like, and I'll, you know, I don't know if this is going to change my habits at all. Probably not. But every so often, I mean, as a matter of fact, the very first time that I ever had whiskey of any kind, I was 28, and it was Jameson's Irish whiskey. And the reason that I had it is because I had bought a bottle for Kinky Friedman. He was on his way into the radio station, and he had just written his first mystery novel, and his character in the book, which is him, drinks Jameson. So I thought, oh, this will be cute. I'll give him a nice little pint bottle of Jameson when he comes in. And he offered me a sip of it, and I took it. And I thought, okay, so that's what whiskey tastes like. And then we just had this great conversation. And it wasn't until probably about 15 years later that that he and I would sit down again. We did an interview over the phone for the radio station. This is when I was in St. Louis. And he was playing at this very groovy, converted old house that had been made into a kind of beer bar and concert venue-ish, you know, and they would do poetry slams there and things like that. And the backyard was all full of stuff from old St. Louis. It was all these signs from places that hadn't existed in 50 years and all that. It was very cool. And so we did the interview. I went to see the show, and we ended up hanging out before and then again after the show and just talked. And it was fantastic. I mean, I've told people before, and we, you know, he's one of those giants that we lost this week, that Kinky Friedman, I think, is probably the deepest thinker and the most thoughtful person that I know. You can tell when he's by himself, which was most of the time. I mean, he spent a lot of time alone reading and writing and creating and doing all of this, that his favorite pastime is sitting and thinking. And I loved that about him, because he would come up with things that would just make you go, I mean, it would stun you for a minute, and then you think about it and go, damn it, he's right. I mean, it was just amazing. And the fact that he could do that and be as funny, as naturally funny as he was, but in a very kind of understated and dry fashion, that you had to really be, you had to get it in order to get his humor. And I think when he found those people, he was really attracted to them. So, I mean, we got on famously, and he's one that I discovered because my dad was a fan and just could not have been happier about the fact that later in life, not only did I get to meet him, but I think we became, you know, I won't say we were best friends. We weren't, not anywhere even close to that, but we had that moment, and it was a great time, and I'll miss him. I mean, I will miss him like crazy, because I just loved everything he did.
You know, my mother actually was a fan because his name was Kinky Friedman.
Of course.
And naturally.
And the Texas Jew Boys didn't hurt
right,
either.
Right, naturally, you know. But I got into him when I used to hear him regularly on Imus. And, you know, there was nobody that loved him more than Don Imus did.
Oh, yeah.
He opened up a whole new world for Kinky, and a whole new plethora of listeners and fans. And I mean, what a genius. He was a genius, you know. And you'd see him walking around, like, over by Village Cigars in the West Village on 7th Avenue. And he was just such an approachable kind of guy, you know?
Yeah.
But he was a brilliant writer and a brilliant he was able to put things into focus in a way that never came off as condescending or obnoxious or, you know, he just gave it to you straight. But with kindness,
yes.
You know, he didn't sugarcoat things, but he wasn't truly an asshole from El Paso.
Yeah, indeed. Well, and I'll tell you, if you're looking for something that you may not have run into, that time back in Nashville, the very first time that I met him, he brought me a copy of this. He was out on tour promoting an album that he did not sing on, which is kind of a strange thing, but they had done a tribute album of his songs sung by other artists. And the list of other artists was unbelievable as well. The album is called Pearls in the Snow. And Ride 'em Jew Boy was performed on that album by Willie Nelson. And it's spectacular. I mean, Kinky's original version is enough to bring tears. Listening to Willie sing that thing, I mean, it's odd for Willie Nelson to be singing a Holocaust remembrance song anyway, but I guess, and it just came off as utterly perfect. I mean, from beginning to end, he tempoed it up just a little bit and made it a more... Kinky's version is very much stripped down, him and a guitar, and just very pared down rest of the band. When Willie did it, it was a full band effort, and they're very different from each other, but I love them both dearly. And I just check out that Pearls in the Snow album. I think you'll really dig it.
And we also lost Martin Mull.
Yeah.
A funny, funny man who, you know... we know him obviously from Fernwood Tonight, naturally.
And FM, and yeah, we can go on and on down the list, right. Absolutely.
But to me, one of my favorite moments was of him on Michael Nesmith's television parts, the series, in which he did a whole thing about insurance in case an iceberg hits your house.
Because of course he did.
Right. And I mean, that was like the definition of his kind of humor. And naturally he did it with that straight Martin Mull face, you know, just deadpan, perfect. I also saw him once, I kid you not, playing guitar. I want to say this was, and I don't think he was a guest on the show. I think it was, what's his name?
Fred Willard?
John Lithgow was hosting Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
And there was a break in between sketches before the commercial, and nobody said a word about it or anything, but Lithgow and Mull were sitting together on stools playing guitars and riffing off of each other, and they were both... my mouth dropped open about how amazing both players were. Imagine if you would... for argument's sake, like Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page sitting together with acoustic guitars.
Right.
It was one of those scenarios.
Uh-huh.
But you're going, wait a minute. That's Martin Mull. What's he doing here? Holy Christ, Lithgow can play like nobody's business.
Right. Why did I not know either one of these guys could play at all? And now they come out here and blow me away. It's like the first time. I mean, when I saw Roy Clark on... He was on...
The Odd Couple?
He did that guest slot on The Odd Couple, and he sat there.
He played the short version. Mulligan, yeah.
And it was just, mind-blowing. So, yeah, I can see that. And the other thing, I mean, when you talk about Martin Mull, okay, so you have Mr. Mom, you have Fernwood Tonight, you have The History of White People in America, which, oh my God, is one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen in my life. And it's that same thing. I mean, Fred Willard, if I remember correctly, was the dad of the family, of the typical white family that they were profiling on that show. And it was Mary Kay Place, I think, was the mom. And it was hilarious. I mean, everything was, you know, everything had mayonnaise piled all over it. And at one point, they did this bit where it was kind of a little aside. If you've never seen the show, it was a series that was on Showtime or HBO back in the early 80s. Half-hour episodes. And... they did it documentary style. It was kind of a play on the Loud family thing that PBS did back in the early 70s. So it was, who are the typical white family? And at one point they're doing this little aside, and it's like one of these educational things. And he's like, so let's explore what a white person is. And he's going through and showing examples of different people. You know, is this man white? Is this man white? You know, no, look at the way he's dressed. And another one was, they pop up a picture of Larry Bird, and he says, is this fellow white? Nope. Wrong profession. I'm on the floor trying to breathe, and it was just he could do that kind of stuff, that kind of deep cutting satire, without it ever being insulting. And that's, I mean, and he went into it with that dry delivery that seems so completely innocent and naive, and yet it was hilariously funny. And that's the kind of stuff Martin Mull was the best at. He also, by the way, and I don't remember when he stopped this, but for a while back then, every year on his birthday, he would kick a field goal that was the same distance as his age. I think the last one he did was 55. And he was successful all the way up to, I mean, can you imagine being 55 and kicking a 55-yard field goal? Martin Ball did it.
I'm 59. I can't even fathom walking 10 feet from the bed to the bathroom.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it was just such genius work. And there was never a time that he showed up in something and I went, oh, that was kind of phoned in. Everything from Martin Mull was delivered the way you wanted it to be.
We also lost two, no pun intended, two giants of baseball who both happened to play for
the Giants. Yep.
The one and only, the great Seihei Willie Mays, and the Bull himself, Orlando Cepeda.
Yeah.
And the really painful part was we were watching the ball game, and that's when the news about Willie Mays broke during the game. And it was, you could tell it was very difficult for Gary Cohn and Keith Hernandez, who grew up in the Bay Area and was a Giants fan as a child, to really get through doing it and making the announcement and talking about him without, you know, stopping and kind of getting choked up. It was tough. It was very tough.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
it reminded me of when Tom Seaver passed.
Yes. Well, and the other thing is that, I mean, obviously with everything that he went through, with all of the, you know, the hate mail and the death threats and all of the other crap that he had to go through. And you look now at, you know, somebody coming up and the kids who come out of, you know, Little League and come out of, you know, minors and all of this stuff who are trying to make a name for themselves. And you think, okay, I wonder if they have any inkling about the groundwork that was laid for them by the likes of Willie Mays and so many other guys who had to be not only as good as everybody else around them, but had to be 10 times better to even get a shot, and then had to deal with all the crap from the fans and everything else. To be able to do that and shoulder that while you're still performing better than anybody else in the league, I don't know how you do that.
Well, I can tell you right now, I've over the years, I have seen and heard younger baseball players who are up and comers who have absolutely no point of reference, and it's a disgrace.
Yeah,
it really is. You know, it's like, people, I know this is going to sound weird, but people always, you know, would look at me incredulously and sarcastically ask, like, why would you know these things about record labels or this and that? Because it's your responsibility to know it. That's the whole thing. And you know the history, you know the players involved, doesn't matter whatever your chosen profession is. If you're a baseball player and you don't know, because there was one who had no idea who Jackie Robinson was or what Jackie Robinson meant, but if you don't know who Willie Mays, Orlando Cepeda, Roberto Clemente, you know, and other, you know, again, tremendous players of that era, you know, I don't care. Duke Snider, you know, Pee Wee Reese, you know, the list is endless. I don't know why I'm riffing on the Brooklyn Dodgers, probably because that was my mother's team of choice, you know. The other players I can think of, they're all much more minor characters. You know, like Bobby Thompson had his one shot heard around the world.
Had the moment.
That was really it.
Right.
You know, Don Drysdale, Sandy Koufax, for God's sakes. You know, those guys were focused on playing the game the best that they could.
Yeah.
They weren't treated like they were demigods in high school, you know. These guys went out, played baseball, and then at the end of the baseball season, worked regular jobs like you and I do. You know, these, you'd find them working at the local appliance stores or selling insurance, or some became dentists and lawyers and et cetera, in the off season. You know, Tug McGraw, who was my boyhood hero, if I remember correctly, he was a barber. You know, I mean,
wow.
You know, you just, younger players have zero respect for their chosen sport, and they are amongst the luckiest of all. And you know, to have somebody like, I was lucky enough to see Willie Mays play his last two seasons when he was traded to the Mets, so I got to see it firsthand. And it didn't matter that he was 40 years old, 42 years old, whatever it was at the time, he could hit for power. When he was at the plate, you got scared if you were the opposition, because yeah, that ball had the chance 9 times out of 10 of going well out of the ballpark.
There was a time when, you know, and that's funny you mentioned that, because there was a time when I got to sit at Tampa Stadium long, long time ago and watch the Tampa Bay Rowdies play the New York Cosmos. And it was an exhibition game, and Pelé came out and took the field. I mean, it was long after he had retired, and it didn't count for anything because, like I said, it was an exhibition game. But, I mean, seeing that man, who at that point had to be 50, you know, out there running around with a bunch of 25-year-olds, and just, again, you got that appreciation for how good he must have been in his prime, where it's just like it's a grown man out there playing with children. And I mean, may everybody get the opportunity to do that at least once and see one of those old guys come out the same way as, you know, Gretzky played against, when he was in the minors. For crying out loud, my brain just fried. Best hockey player ever.
Mario Lemieux?
No, long time ago. When Gretzky was a kid, Gretzky was like 16 or 17 years old.
Gordie Howe?
Gordie Howe, yes, thank you. You know,
Gretzky, who smashed all of Gordie Howe's records.
Oh, yeah.
Except longevity in playing.
And so you had Gretzky coming up through juniors when Gordie Howe was set to retire, but he was still out there on the ice because he still loved what he was doing. And Gretzky told this story about going up and stealing the puck from Gordie Howe and going down and scoring a goal. And he said, you know, two shifts later, Gordie Howe comes out and just absolutely tomahawk chops him with a stick and says, "Don't ever show me up, kid." You know? It's like, yeah, have a little respect. You haven't earned the right to do that yet.
Well, it's like they always call, you know, you get the rookie who's going to showboat. It's like, come here, meat. Mm-hmm. You know? And you give him a good what for.
Yep.
You know?
Exactly. Yeah, hit him in the teeth. Well,
now speaking of which, we'll keep this really brief. The Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup, and I couldn't have been more disinterested in either one of them winning, whether it was Edmonton or Florida.
Yeah.
The Rangers just didn't show up. That's the only way to look at it. They didn't show up for the first game against Florida, and they didn't show up for the second game. And, I mean, they won the second game, but still, they were playing from behind in every game. They didn't command any of them, and that that was very troubling. And the fact is, most of their main guys didn't even bother to show up at all for that series. There was no Panarin. There was no Zibanejad. Drury was MIA. Trouba was horrible. If they trade Keandre Miller or Kaapo Kakko, I will not lose sleep over it. Yeah. Because there is talk about trading them to Ottawa for Matthew Tkachuk's brother, Brady. I would do that deal. I would do that trade. You know, they left Igor Shesterkin out there to dry. And Igor did everything in his humanly possible ways to keep that team in the games.
Oh, yeah. He was incredible.
When you leave that goaltender hung out to dry the way you did, they also played very stupidly.
Yeah, they did.
They played down. They played down. Now, I'm sorry, but I will say this. I think the Carolina Panthers are a better team than the Florida Panthers. Carolina Hurricanes are a better team than the Florida Panthers, but the Rangers dispatched them. There was no excuse for the way the Rangers played against the Florida Panthers. I do have a problem with the way they just flat. They were no show. Absolute no show. And it's impardonable.
Yeah.
Absolutely impardonable. There's just no excuses to be made. None are acceptable. You went out and you swept the Washington Capitals, who are probably the team that will hurt you the most because it's a genuine grudge match when it's the Rangers and the Capitals.
Sure.
You know, Carolina is next on that hate list, but they dispatched them, you know, and they didn't have to take it to seven games. The Rangers, I don't know what the mindset was and how they let this get by them. So, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals itself, all I can say is I loved the fact that Edmonton got down 3-0 and came roaring back. And I even
and
said
forced game seven, yeah,
several people, if you give Edmonton a chance to score, their goals average per game during the regular season was 5 to 6 goals a game.
Yep.
And what happened? The first game that they finally won.
8-1.
Right. And each game after that was another like 6 or 5 goals.
Right. And so in game seven, it was a 4-3. And I said, you know, if Edmonton scores early in game seven, it's going to be a floodgates kind of game. They didn't. Yeah. They let Florida put one up. And I was like, oh, this is back to even odds.
I'll tell you what, the big problem I had was, and this is why I think if the Rangers had played the Oilers, quite frankly, they would have taken them out in 4 games easily. during the game seven with Florida, when Florida scored the go-ahead goal, they could have taken Skinner out really quickly because he makes mental mistakes. He let that shot go right through his legs. You don't even close your legs for that. You see he's going to shoot.
Right.
Absolutely have to close up. There were so many times that the same shots were taken against Florida's goalie.
Bobrovsky.
Same shots. And he knew what to do. So, you know, the big hole for Edmonton is their goaltending. And that's why I think the Rangers could have really, really, really put it to them. So, regardless, it just didn't mean much of anything now. Having said that, of course, I don't care about basketball. I don't care that the Celtics won the NBA championship. Nah. The Mets, I will give them this much. They started the season okay. Then they got really, really awful in May.
The Royals.
Totally awful. But then, with the exception of today's game, which was unfortunate, that this is the first series they've lost in the month of June, actually. Because they've won all their other series, if not sweeps. But they let the bullpen let it get. There was a two-hour rain delay. It was a 4-4 score. Top of the 10th inning with the free runner. Astros score. Mets come roaring right back. Have a man on second base. Nobody out. They don't score. And they gave up 6 runs in the 11th inning. And that was the end of that. The Mets have an atrocity of a bullpen. It needs to be fixed. It needs to be addressed. But the Mets had the best record in baseball overall for the month of June. Most wins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the average that they're scoring, again, average is about 5 runs a game. I mean, that's been the phenomenal turnaround just for this month. So right now they are in the thick of the wild card thing. They leapfrogged over Washington into third place. Yes, they're about 12.5 or 13.5 games back of first place, but it's the end of June.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that, you know, there's going to be some kind of miracle or great revelation, but when you put the Mets, who are, you know, destined to go to probably last place, if not next to last place at the beginning of the year and not be a contending team, you put them up against, let's say the Texas Rangers, who they took 2 of 3 games from 2 weeks ago. Texas will probably be sellers at the deadline.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You look at the Padres, they're something like 9.5 games behind the Dodgers. They're just the Cubs are a disaster. And you go down the list of these teams and it's like, what the hell?
Right.
The Mets are actually not awful.
Well, yeah, and you know the Royals did the same thing. They just did it a couple of months later. They came out of the box fairly hot. I mean, considering how absolutely horrid they were last year. I think by this point in the season they had won all of 15 games. They've now won 46. But, you know, up until maybe a month ago, they were looking really, really good. And
I mean, they signed a former Met, Seth Lugo, who has been on fire.
Right. But now for the last 15 games, I think they're 2-13. So, yeah, it hasn't been great. And, everybody's looking at them going, OK, you started out so well. You seemed like you had it figured out. And now it's just fallen apart again. So I have no idea what to expect out of them in a game.
Look at the Braves, the almighty Braves, for God's sakes. They're 8.5 games behind the Phillies. 8.5 games.
Right.
You know, and now the Phillies are down their top 3 guys. Harper, Realmuto, and Schwarber. So how much of an impact is that going to have on them in going into July? I mean, you just don't know. But now the question mark is, you know, with all the big talk about Pete Alonso being a free agent, blah, 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 blah. Okay, one, he's 29 years old. He's only been in the league for 4 years, right? 4 years?
Yeah, I think so,
2019 was his first year. Yeah.
5 years.
This is his 5th season. So obviously it took a very long time. I don't care who you are. I don't give a 29-year-old player who's only been around for 5 seasons a, you know, 10-year deal or any of that kind. First of all, 10-year deal is not in my lexicon. Mine is the old school of thought. The way the Cleveland Indians did it back in the early 90s, especially when they had the young players that they could control for about 6 years. But you give them a 4-year offer with an option for a 5th. If you've earned that 5th year, you know, then we pick up the option. But you give – because every year Alonso's numbers are declining. And this year he's having a terrible season.
And what happens? You're locked in.
You know, you're right. You're your walk year is not going to get you what you thought you were going to get. It's that simple. You've already shot yourself in the foot. But having said that, you know, the Mets need to address the bullpen situation because they don't have a bullpen. Edwin Diaz, they signed him for that 3-year ridiculous amount of money. They thought they were getting the same guy that they had in 2022. He breaks his leg out all of last year. This year, it's the Edwin Diaz that we saw 2018, 19, 20, and 21. Guy can't even close a door.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's just horrible. What does he do? Gives up the home run ball, gives up, loses the games. Dump him. Jettison the contracts that are not going to do you any good. You know, I'm sorry. This guy is not what you think. I don't know how, you know, people will convince themselves of this kind of thing. They're baseball players. You know, they're not demigods.
Right.
And we have seen, if you have seen a ball player have 4 years of just absolute atrocities and has one good year, you don't merit a contract on that one good year. Because you don't know what's going to happen the next year. He might revert right back because, oh, surprise, surprise, it was his walk year. Suddenly he was lights out. Now he can go back to sucking every time he comes up to the mound.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know, and there's nothing going on in football right now. But, well, actually, that's not entirely true. Chiefs players keep getting arrested, so that's kind of fun. But outside of that, the one thing that has been just irritating me to no end is that every time I open Facebook, because I'm a member of all of the Bills groups, the Bills Mafia, the Bills backers, the Bills this, the Bills that, and they keep running these stupid articles that come out with a headline that says, Buffalo Bills considering trading for this guy, and it's always some huge name that you know they're not going to get, and then you read the article, they're not thinking about anything. Some dude sat there and went, gee, what do you suppose would happen if they went after this guy? Just stop it.
That constantly crops up on my Facebook
feed. Oh, I hate it.
Which is part of the reason why I'm not on Facebook anymore. You know, I'm very rarely on there. And in my Twitter feed, you get these, you know, the proverbial armchair quarterbacks who just, you know, they think they know everything. And wouldn't it be great? I don't want to hear your speculations. You know, right. Wouldn't it be great if I had $1 million? You know, that's the same principle.
Right.
You know, stop, moron. You know, go outside and get some fresh air. Read a book. You know,
exactly. So yeah, please, for all the love in the world, stop putting those stupid articles online and stop with the misleading headlines as well.
By the way, one thing we forgot to touch on, the Arizona Coyotes, right? The Phoenix Coyotes, what were they called?
They were the Phoenix. Now they're Arizona. Yeah.
Right. The first iteration of the Winnipeg Jets to Arizona have now up and moved to Utah.
Right.
And they don't have a name yet.
So they're going to be the Salt Lake City something. Yeah. Who knows?
It's kind of like the Utah Ice Caps or something like that and have done with it. You know, it's just don't be cutesy, you know?
Right.
The whole saga with this clown who was the owner, they were going to give him the rights to the name, though. So if they brought back another team into Arizona, you know, once he established the building of an arena, which is what all this is built around, you know, they could call it the Arizona Coyotes and blah, 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 blah. Well, guess what got voted down? The concept of giving this guy the funding for an arena.
Good.
It's not going to happen. It's a failed experiment, folks. It didn't work. You know, they should have left well enough alone. Now, what you do is this. This team is not going to do well in Utah. It's just not. Hockey is not going to play well in Salt Lake City. I'm sorry. It really isn't going to go anywhere. You know?
Yeah.
Move them to Atlanta.
There you go.
Put a team back in Atlanta. Put a team back in Kansas City. Replenish the cities except for Quebec City. Replenish the city because they just can't compete with the Montreal Canadiens.
Atlanta lost one twice. So, right. Yeah, I think they should definitely be at the top of the list.
Keep in mind, the 2 times that it happened wasn't through the fault of the fan base. It wasn't like they didn't have fans showing up. It was the owners.
Yes.
You know, the owner of the Flames was kind of crooked or something very shady. So had to sell the team so he wouldn't be prosecuted, and that's why they moved to Calgary. The original ownership of the Atlanta Thrashers was Time Warner, because they were founded when I was working for Time Warner. Time Warner owned the Thrashers, the Hawks, and the Braves. And when the AOL Time Warner debacle happened, they had to divest themselves of their sports franchises, which, of course, set off the domino effect of them selling off basically everything that had made Time Warner one of the best and most viable companies on the planet and destroyed that entire empire. But nevertheless, they had to sell off the teams. And when the new ownership took over, they failed miserably in what they were supposed to be doing. They lost a ton of money. They pissed off the fans. The fans were still showing up. They never lost the fan base. But this consortium from, of all places, Winnipeg, comes along. They bought the team and moved the Thrashers up to Winnipeg. This is why we have Winnipeg Jets number 2.
Yeah.
So just so you know your history and background, folks.
There we go. And as we move into music, we will get to the debate, I guess, if we have to. But as we move into music, I actually have some music for you, Rob. There's a couple of guys that I got turned on to by our mutual friend, Robbie Rist. And I was listening into his podcast, The Spoon, which is fantastic. You should listen to that when you're done with us. And they, a couple of times over the last few episodes, have gone into this band. It's actually two guys, two brothers, and they both play everything. You know what I mean? They play all the instruments. It is the Lemon Twigs. That's exactly where we're going. Yes. I mean, they've put two albums out in the last 8 months, and both of them have been absolutely outstanding. The one they did at the end of 2023, Harmony is in the title. I was just blown away the first time I heard it. I couldn't stop listening to it. Heard the first track, and I was like, okay, let's see what else they've got here. And just kept through and listened to the entire album. And then they released one about a month ago, and it's just fantastic. These guys are so much fun to listen to.
I was turned on to them, I want to say 6 years ago. It was well before the pandemic, 6-7 years ago, something like that. By Nick Celeste, who, the very wonderful musician who I love dearly, who has played, amongst other people, with Dramarama and with Richard Barone. He turned me on to them. And, you know, he said, of course, they love Big Star and, you know, they love Todd Rundgren.
And you can
listen
hear
to those first two records and it's like, holy Christ, they really do have that down pat. The interesting thing is that one of the D'Addario brothers was an actor. He was in a movie with Elizabeth Banks, and it was a Chris Pine, I think, called People Like Us. He played Elizabeth Banks' son when he was a little boy.
Okay.
And Chris Pine is trying to hip him to music, and he turns him on to Joy Division and The Clash and The Who and all of this kind of stuff. And you can tell because he's kind of like drumming with his hands in one of the scenes, and you know, you can see he's got the cadence down pat, and it's like, oh, okay. But, Nick turned me onto them years and years ago, and I don't remember where I'd seen it, but I saw a concert of theirs. I think it was on YouTube or something like that. And live, those guys just were a powerhouse.
Yeah.
You know, because the harmonies are so watertight. In a lot of ways, they remind me of the McDonald brothers from Red Cross. But, yeah, I it's funny. I had a feeling the minute you said two brothers, I was like,
gotta be.
It's gotta
right.
be.
Well, it sure as hell ain't gonna be Oasis. So the one that came out last year was called Everything Harmony. That came out in 2023, and the brand new one is called A Dream Is All We Know. And I mean, start with either one of those, or go back to Do Hollywood or Songs for the General Public, whatever it is, just listen to the Lemon Twigs. You will absolutely love them.
And now for me on the musical front, because it's been since we did the last show, the news is that the DBs, the beloved, vaunted DBs from Winston-Salem, North Carolina / New York City, their long-deleted Missing in Action catalog of their first two very well-loved albums, Stands for Decibels, 1981, and Repercussion, also late 1981, are to be re-released on vinyl, digital, and CD.
Fantastic.
Through Propeller Sound Recordings. Now, I got the press release. Of course, I freaked out. I shared the press release. And then, lo and behold, I got the CD copy of Stands for Decibels, which has been remastered. And it sounds so much better than the original one. One problem I had was that it sounded a little muted. You know, like this is a very explosive record that should have had so much more punch. But now it's been cleaned up and it has that life to it. And it was, in fact, re-released. And the DBs themselves, yes, indeed, they're going to be playing around the United States later in the summer.
Oh, so that's fantastic.
If you have an opportunity to see them, you absolutely must do so. Of course, I won't be able to because I'll be in Florida when they play in the New York area, as will be the big star, 50th anniversary of Radio City. Okay, I'll live with it. I've seen the DBs. I can tell you, even now that they're older, they're still just as magnificent and just as powerful. And later this year, Repercussion will in fact be re-released, which Repercussion is on my top five all-time list of most perfect albums. There's no filler, no junk, no kidding. It's just a masterpiece, and it's an album that I still refer back to, you know, that's always informed my songwriting, especially as I started to become more of a poppy writer than a, you know, punk writer in my very late teenage years. Repercussion is an album I hold very high in esteem, just as I do Revolver and Sellout and Number One Record and Sound Effects and Murmur and so on and so forth. Yeah. That's coming out. It'll be remastered. Again, same thing, three formats, digital, vinyl, CD. It doesn't matter. You have your opportunity now. Go get them. Go get these records and discover or rediscover the DBs. And on the flip side of all of this, May 24th, an album called 66 was released. Paul Weller's latest solo record, released the day before his 66th birthday. Naturally, it's a really, you know what? This isn't a groundbreaker album for him, but it's a wonderfully warm and human album that it's kind of like having an old friend over and you're just getting together and jamming and feeling good. You know, that's the kind of vibe you get from this. It's a vibe album. That's what it is. And I picked up the deluxe edition. It's a really beautifully done cover by Peter Blake, who designed the Sgt. Pepper cover, actually. It's the second time he's worked with Weller because he designed the cover for Stanley Road. Beautiful hardcover edition, has a bonus disc in it. Looks great. It sounds fantastic. And I will be seeing Mr. Weller in September. This is something I'm looking forward to, and you will be able to find the review for Stands for Decibels currently up on Music Tap, and you'll find the review for Weller there as well. So, you know, that's another one to be looking out for. So,
Good deal.
FYI.
All right. Well, as we get through the summer, we're getting ever closer to November, and that means we're all going to have to hold our nose and go into the voting booth. And I tell you, if that debacle, that absolute horrifying, embarrassing debacle of a debate that happened the other night is any indication whatsoever, I don't know what to make of this. I can't imagine 45 people nationwide going out to vote for either one of these idiots.
I'm just going to very simply say this. You watch CNN, you watch the way they presented it, and I'm going to lay all of this at the feet of
they were terrible. The they were so bad.
The news media are at fault for everything, and I mean everything. And, you know, I just have absolutely no desire to watch the news. I will pick up my news in snippets and glimpses. I just want the essentials. I don't want anything else. I don't want to hear what they're churning out as the, quote, headlines of the day or stories of the day. I don't even look to the news for my weather reports anymore. I look on my phone to see if there's any accuracy.
Yeah. I mean, if I want to hear two old white assholes sit there and bitch about which one has the better golf swing, there is a reason why I don't hang out on the golf course, okay? And it's because I don't like listening to two old white assholes talk about which one has the better golf swing. I certainly don't want to watch it during a presidential debate. It was embarrassing.
It was a cringe fest. I'm happy to say that I'd kind of forgotten about it for a while. So I kind of I flipped back and was like, oh, shit, there's a debate tonight. Oh, let me just take a quick look.
Right.
And I looked and I was like, well, now you know why I'm not watching this garbage.
There you go.
I mean, I hate both of those guys. I really do. I just happen to hate one more than I hate the other.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that I hate both of them. That's all there is to it. And either way, we're going to get fucked royally. That's not being funny or flip. We're going to get fucked. And these last 4 years have been a nightmare. I'm more concerned with the way people react towards things and the fact that I don't know a single soul who does not have a problem trying to figure out how the hell am I going to afford groceries.
I know.
The basics. The absolute basics.
And you know, when they ask them. I don't know if you sorry to interrupt. I don't know if you saw that part. When they asked them, what are you going to do about
neither
people?
Neither could answer.
No, neither one of them. They didn't have any answer.
Right. Went to something else. No, what I was going to say is, like, now you find that I don't know if you've seen this or if it's anywhere out by you, but the people are charging $5 to go and use an air pump at the gas stations.
$5. Holy shit.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell is going on? This is what we are mired in, folks. This is real. This is ugly. This is not acceptable.
Oh, but don't forget to tip.
Yeah. Well, this is, but now, you know, this is why we're also having a lot of companies going far more automated, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that 750,000 robots will replace, in fact, 100,000 people, or if it hasn't already been done at Amazon. This is what happens when you have certain programs thrown out there and forced upon you. Look at California, and that's all I need to say.
Well, you
nothing
know what?
Else.
On top of that, not only are we talking about automating jobs, the other thing that's going to happen, don't get used to going to the store ever, because Walgreens just announced that they are looking at closing maybe as many as 2,100 stores. 2,100 stores nationwide. They only have 8,600 stores. I mean, we're talking about them looking at a quarter of their stores going.
When was the last time that you went to a Target, by the way? Just out of curiosity.
I have recently. The only reason that I have recently is that's where my pharmacy is inside Target. Do I buy anything when I'm there? What, do I look rich? No.
Well, the reason I ask is because, you know, if you want a bottle of laundry detergent, you have to ring the bell,
yep,
and wait for somebody to come and open and unlock the cabinets. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
You know, so I got nothing else besides that for anything that has to do with politics. Now, on the one political front that I'm absolutely shocked and stunned by is in New York City, you know, the MTA, which is basically a, quote, legalized crime syndicate, had the audacity to come up with this nonsense called a congestion pricing plan to charge people to drive into Manhattan.
I heard about that.
It's like tolls. And it was like a big thing that all the Democratic socialists of New York City have been, you know, beating the drums upon. And at the almost 11th hour, Democrat Governor Kathy Hochul, who I absolutely despise, put the kibosh on it. You have no idea how much hand-wringing is going on from these communist assholes, and the fact that you can't pay the cost of regular tolls that we have now. I mean, to drive out where I am in Staten Island, all the bridges cost $18 and $19.
Right.
That's right, $18 or $19 to get out. You know, it would destroy commerce even further. People have begun to take pictures of the city, you know, during the span, and you don't see cars around in certain areas to begin with. Where is the congestion? So hopefully Hochul, who will maintain this one thing that she actually did right, because when I say this woman is not fit to govern anything, she's not even fit to be a dog catcher. She did one thing that was right. And I got to tell you, watching all of these assholes screaming and pulling their hair out has given me no end of joy.
Well, yeah.
Because they are so unbelievably despicable. And I'm being really, really cautious and really nice. The Democratic Socialists, the communists of New York City, are the biggest disgrace in politics, save for what we've got going on in Washington right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but as I understood that whole thing about surge pricing for driving into New York City, all of that was designed to put the burden directly on people who deliver the shit that you consume.
Yes.
Oh, my
yes.
God.
Now explain to me, why are they paying to basically bail out the MTA for a lifetime of fuck-ups? Do we not remember how the MTA accidentally let it slip that they'd had a surplus of money a few
right.
years ago?
Yeah, they were sitting on.
where's the fucking money?
Right. Well, and so obviously you're going to take it out of the people who are rolling in cash, delivery drivers, right? Everybody knows that they're just all rich. You know, they're all sitting there in their mansions going, oh, I forgot I have to make that delivery in New York. I mean, come on, take it away from people who have money. You know, it's all insane. None of it made any sense. And
I will go out on a limb here and I will say one thing. There was some joyous political news this week in New York. There was a primary in which there were two contestants for a congressional seat, and possibly one of the biggest pieces of shit that has ever sat in Congress was ousted, and I couldn't have been happier. I'm sure you've heard of Jamal Bowman.
Uh-huh.
Real mouth-breathing asshole, if there ever was one. The fire alarm puller, as everybody knows him. He got ousted. And of course, he's blaming the Jews because he's known as the biggest anti-Semite out there along with Omar and Tlaib. But he was embarrassed in no, just, it was wonderful to see him fall apart, especially after last weekend's cringe video that's been making the rounds of having that half-witted donkey, AOC jump on a stage and make a fool of herself with him, and him acting like the half-witted cretin that he is. I mean, talk about bottom feeders. Folks, we're in big trouble right now as a country, as one people. We need serious people, not assholes like this who are keeping the whole idea of divide and conquer, and they reap all the profits because all of them are really fucking wealthy.
Give me an idea.
They don't pay the taxes. You know, they're fucking all of us. Doesn't matter if they're Democrats or Republicans, but they're garbage as human beings. That's the problem. The most ineffectual, unqualified bottom feeders on the planet are in office. This is why we as a collective people, as one country, as Americans, need to start voting the shit out.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're not, you, me, or anybody else is ever going to find that ideal candidate. They don't exist. That's I'm not going to delude any of us into fantasy. They don't exist. But the reality is, and it pains me to say it, but we have to go sometimes with the lesser of the two evils. If you've seen somebody who's not done a job for 2 to 4 years in their run in whatever office they hold, you vote them out. That's it. And you get somebody else and see what the next person might be able to do, because towing the party line doesn't work.
Right. Well,
that's,
and I'll tell you,
kill you,
as I'll leave you with this. This will be my kind of last word for this one, is that, you know, you said something nice about Kathy Hochul. This may come as just as big a surprise. Not only am I going to praise a Republican governor, I'm going to praise Ron DeSantis, because Ron DeSantis this week did something right as well. Now, granted, it wasn't quite as big a deal. It wasn't really a policy thing. But Ron DeSantis signed a bill in the state of Florida this week that made A1A Jimmy Buffett Memorial Highway. And you know what? Good for him. Good for him. And I mean, it wasn't his bill, but it had to be done. It needed to be done. It should have been done.
And it was done quickly.
Done. Exactly. And it was done. We lost Jimmy less than a year ago. And all of a sudden, the entirety of A1A, which, if you don't know the geography, goes from just south of Miami all the way. Actually, it goes along the east coast of Florida, all the way down through the Keys and into Key West. That's his road. And of course, he had an album called A1A. So yeah, I mean, it's great to see that. And honestly, I can't wait until the next time I drive that road to see those signs.
Yeah, I the whole political thing makes me sick. And the fact that we can't talk to one another as human beings and have respect like we used to be able to, and even when we were younger, you know? People ever since the Clinton-Trump era of 2015, it's been, you know, I want your blood and I want your blood. You know, it's very simple. I will destroy you and I will destroy you. And it's just, it's insane. You know, we're not all going to see the same exact things. What we want to see is good for everybody. We want to see people working. We want to see people being able to go to the grocery store and afford groceries, to be able to take their kids to the movie. Well, no, not to the movies, because no one should go to see anything that's coming out of Hollywood. forget that part. I retract that. You know, you want to take them to a baseball game, for argument's sake. Take them to an amusement park. Take them to a museum, you know. you want to be able to have a decent, balanced life that you can afford. It doesn't have to be mired in politics. You want to be able to go to Target and buy the things you need without having to ask somebody to open up a cabinet. You know, you want to be able to live a normal life.
Yeah.
And the current crop of politicians that we have in office on all sides, but especially one in particular, they are destroying this country. They want division. They want enmity. They want suspicion. They want paranoia. They want hate. They feed off of it. They're thriving on it. And more importantly, folks, they're profiting from it. And if you can't see that, it's a shame, because that's the brute reality here.
You got it.
They're trying to destroy the United States, because at the end of the day, the United States as a concept and idea, which has lived this far, is a really beautiful thing that can continue to work and grow and thrive. And I really believe in that. You know, I'm not a nationalist, but I am a patriot. And I do believe that we are much better than what we've been showing the rest of the world.
Hell yeah. You know?
And now it's time to start showing those people that we elected into office, hey, you work for us. This is the part we can't forget. They work for us. You don't do the job, you're fucking fired.
Great way
Sorry,
to leave
I did not mean to get on the soapbox, but
not at
you know,
all.
This fucking debate was just another perfect example of how things are wrong and people are just sitting there and being spoon-fed it and taking it on the chin when none of us should.
And they're taking the same lesson that social media has been teaching all of us, that anger sells. And so they decided, oh, anger sells. Good. I like making money. So they've been selling us nothing but that. And we've got to be better than that. Rob Ross, I couldn't agree more, and I also couldn't be happier that we finally got back together and did this again. Thank you so much, and let's not make it so long next time.
This is true, and as always, you know, I mean, you know, folks, John and I talk on a regular basis, but to actually do this, like I said, it's really nice because we get to basically sit in the same room, even though we're, you know, I'm in New York and he's in Kansas, but we're both sitting in the same room having a conversation face to face because we're actually what are we on?
Skype.
Skype. Hey,
we're old school. We don't do this Zoom crap. We use Skype, man.
Right. but we actually get to do this and enjoy it. And, you know, we can actually see one another. So it makes the conversation a lot more, it makes it more poignant. And you know, that's why we do the show. And that's why we hope you enjoy what you hear. Yeah, you may not agree with what we say, but that's fine. As long as you're thinking about it, that's what matters, you know, because it's meant in a respectful way to all of you who've taken the time to sit and listen to us. We just want you to think about stuff, you know. We're thinking about it because we're no different. You know, that's the whole thing. We're just a couple of dudes, you know.
Just guys being dudes. That's it. All right, brother. Well, take care of your own self.
All right, you do the same. And to all of you, as always, thank you very much. And have a happy and safe 4th of July. And we will speak to you all again very soon, we promise.